Okay. I want to make an observation that I've spoken about in the past, I don't think here. Yaakov Avinu is the pillar of Torah amongst the Avos. Avraham was Chesed, Yitzchak was Avoda, and Yaakov is Torah. What do we know about Yaakov's Torah learning? Sandwiched between Vayetze and Vayelech, right, there's a hint that he spent 14 years learning in the Yeshiva of Aver. That's the extent, basically, of what we know about Yaakov Avinu's Talmud Torah. The Torah spends most of its time, in this week's Sedra, speaking about Yaakov Avinu's work ethics. It's very strange that here's the Amud HaTorah, and what we find out and hear about Yaakov Avinu is how he works for Lavan. So let me tell you what I think. There is an argument between Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Shmuel how to resolve the following two psukim that seem to contradict each other. On the one hand, it says, V'hagisa bo yom v'alayla, a person has to learn Torah all the time. Doesn't leave too much time for anything else. And yet it says, V'asafta digonecha, you can gather in your crops, which seems to imply that you can work. So how are you working and learning and fulfilling both of these psukim? So Rabbi Yishmael says that the way to resolve the contradiction is hanegi mohim minig derech eretz. Together with the learning, work. But that was the question. If you do both, you're not doing Torah all the time. So how does that answer the question? So I think the simplest answer, which is not really what I want to speak about, but the simplest answer, I think, is the following. It's impossible to learn the pasuk that you should learn Torah all the time, literally. It's impossible. You have to sleep. You have to go to the bathroom. You can't learn then. You have to eat. So what does it mean? Whenever you're not doing something that is humanly required, you should be learning Torah. Says Rabbi Shmuel, that's called Derech Eretz. There's one other thing you have to do. Just like you have to sleep, and you have to eat, and you have to take care of your bodily needs, you have to work, because if you don't work, you won't eat. So therefore, that's included in the Derech Eretz. Hanegi Moen, Minig Derech Eretz. I think that's the simplest answer of explanation of Rabbi Shmuel. That Rabbi Shmuel, right? Rabbi Shmuel. The Meiri, well, based on a Meiri, I want to say a different pshat, which a lot of people say, I'm just going to base it on this Meiri. The Meiri says that, well, let me tell you some of the other pshatim first. Rabbi Chaim Voloshiner says, Hanegi Moim Minig Derech Eretz means you should always be learning. But that doesn't mean that you can't work. You can learn while you work. If you can whistle while you work, you can learn while you work too, right? We used to have guys in our kerem who came from yeshivas that were like, you know, stressed out, so they needed some, time to chill out, which they really got in the kerem, what's it called. So they used to prune trees, pick grapes or whatever, and they were wearing earphones, and they told me they were listening to Torah tapes. I never bothered to see what they were listening to or not, but that's what they said. They were listening to Torah tapes. So you can learn by the work. So he says that's what it means. You have to learn all the time. Sometimes you're learning in a base measure, sometimes you're learning while you're working. So that's very good, but it limits the professions that a person can have. I mean, if you're picking grapes, you probably can listen to Torah tapes while you're picking grapes. But if you're a brain surgeon and you're listening to Torah tapes while you're making a brain operation, you're a murderer. So that would not be a profession that you could learn while you work. Okay? So what I want to say, which many say, is the following. The Meiri explains the mitzvah of eating Erev Yom Kippur. And says if you eat Erev Yom Kippur, it's like you fasted 2 days. So he explains it in the following way. So the Torah wanted you to fast on Yom Kippur in a way that your mind is not the whole day on your stomach. That you'll really get the benefit out of the fast. If you don't eat the day before, then the fast is going to be very oppressive, and you'll be only thinking about how hungry you are. So therefore, the Torah wanted you to eat a good meal the day before Yom Kippur, so when Yom Kippur comes, you'll fast properly. So the eating Erev Yom Kippur is a preparation for fasting. He says the preparation for a mitzvah is part of the mitzvah itself. So when you're eating Erev Yom Kippur, what mitzvah are you preparing for fasting? And the fasting, the eating is a part already of the preparation for fasting. So it's like you fasted 2 days. You're involved in the midst of fasting 2 days. One in the preparatory stage, one in that. Mela. If a person works for a living, but his entire intention of working is to earn money, to be able to live a Torah life, to learn Torah, to practice Torah, to pay his children's tuition, to what's it called, to have a house so he can have hachnasas orchid, right? And he can have, what's it called, not sleep, you know, on a bench as a homeless person and have some peace of mind so he can be an observant person and not go out of his mind. If that's his intention, then all the time that he's working is a preparation for his learning and observing whatever, right? Because the mitzvahs are also part of learning, because if you don't do, the learning is meaningless. So his whole day centers around his learning Torah. But these are the preparations. So it's also all part of learning Torah. Okay. In addition, if a person learns Torah, so therefore, but there's only one condition. I mean, it's more than one condition. But there is a condition, that is you have to earn an honest living. Because if you don't earn an honest living, then it can't be a preparation for learning Torah, because it's the antithesis of Torah. Therefore, I wanted to explain the following contradiction. It says in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Ein tchilas dino shel adam el divrei Torah. First thing you're judged on in the next world is Torah, learning Torah. And in Shabbos, it says, when you get to the next world, they ask you six questions. The first question is, Nosasa v'nosasa v'emuna, did you deal in business honestly? The second question is, Kovati itim l'Torah. So Tosus asks, if the first thing you're judged on is Torah, why do they ask you about your business? They should first ask you, did you learn Torah? Then get on with, were you honest in business? Tosus says, yes, the first thing you're judged on is Torah. But the first question they ask you is about business. And then they judge you first on the Torah. Which needs explanation. Why? So I think the answer is the following. A person may learn an hour a day. So he comes, he thinks after 120 years, they're going to ask him, did you set aside time for learning? He say, yeah, an hour, and he thinks he's going to get an hour. But if he really conducted his business properly, and it all was a preparation for that learning that hour, then all the time he was involved in his business counts as learning, because it's all preparation for the learning. So he's not going to get 1 hour credit, he's going to get 10 hours credit of learning a day, when he thinks he wasn't learning. So first we have to ascertain, did you deal in business honestly? If you did, then it's very possible what you think that you spent in learning is much more, because we're going to count your time that you were involved in earning a living so you could learn as part of it. So first we have to ask him about business, then we ask him about Torah, and then we judge him on the Torah first based on those two answers. If that's the case, so the real test of Torah is one, did you do all your other things in life in order that you'd be able to learn and observe Torah? If you did, then your whole life becomes learning Torah. It's v'hagisa bo yom v'layla. And if you didn't, then it could be even the time that you were learning Torah doesn't count, because what's it called, you're a dishonest person or whatever, and the Torah learning itself obviously wasn't the way it should be. So therefore, ein hachinami, Yaakov Avinu was the Amud HaTorah. But in order to really appreciate his Torah, we can't look at the 14 years he didn't sleep in Shem Ve'eva. We have to look at the totality of his life. How was he in business? How did he bring up his family? How did he build a home? That's the real parsha. And then we can understand what kind of Torah he had. So since he was honest in business and everything he did supported his Torah, then Yaakov Avinu was not just 14 years he didn't sleep in Beis Eva. His whole life was Torah. That's what the parsha Vayetzei is about. Next. Okay, it's an interesting side point. It says that Yaakov Avinu davened Maariv. He really was intending to daven Mincha, which Yitzchak already had instituted. And all the others davened, all the davening, just silence who instituted what for the future. But the sun went down faster, and that's why some say that's why Maariv is the exception to the rule, and you really don't have to daven Maariv. Matilis Arvis Rishos, don't get excited. That's not practical anymore, because we've accepted Maariv. We, meaning not be here, but the entire Klal Yisrael, have accepted Maariv as a chiyuv, and you can't really not daven Maariv unless there's a tremendous reason why not. That wouldn't maybe apply to not davening Shacharis, but Maariv is okay. But otherwise, you have to daven Maariv. Okay. But that's the reason why, because really it wasn't intended to daven Maariv altogether. It was just because the sun set, so it turned out to be Maariv. It's one reason why it's considered.
Was it Tashlum or one was it Tashlum?
No, in any case, then he had come on there for whatever. The order of this tefillah, though, is not in order. Because L'chora, Maariv comes first. Then Shacharis, then Mincha. Why was Avraham Shacharis, and Yitzchak Mincha, and Yaakov Maariv? Avraham should have been Maariv. So, one simple answer is that the tefillos, aside from being the fact that the Avos initiated them, are also correspond to the sacrifices. And a sacrificial day starts in the day and ends at night. All other things start at night, like a yontif, Shabbat, start at night and go in the day. But a sacrifice you have to bring in the daytime. Any sacrifice you bring in the daytime, you eat the following night. Korban Pesach, you bring it in the day of the 14th, you eat it the 15th. Shlomim, you bring it in the day, you eat it that night, the next day, right, the next night, 2 days and a night. No, the night in between and the next day, till the night.
But based on your description that Yaakov really wanted to have Mincha, not Maariv, then you have to have Shachas and Mincha, because there was no Maariv.
No, but the question is, why didn't Avraham make Maariv first?
Because it was not supposed to be a Maariv.
But I don't know. According to the Seder of the Avos, right, he should have made Maariv first. So it goes like the Korbanos. So in Korbanos, the day comes before the night. Dates, day, night, Erev and Boker. But for whatever reason, sacrifices start in the day and end in the night. So tefillah corresponds to sacrifices. But the Maharal says a more conceptual idea. The Maharal says like this: each of the Avos instituted the davening that really manifested what their midah was, who they were. Avraham Avinu was the midah of Chesed. He also was the rising sun of the Jewish people. He started, the sunrise of the Jewish people, the beginning, and therefore he represented this idea of the sunrise. Also, the three tefillahs represent, tefillah is where you subjugate yourself to God. So there's three things to subjugate: your body, your emotions, your nefesh, and your seichel, your neshama. The first thing is the body. Avraham Avinu, chesed is done mostly with the body. That's the difference between chesed and tzedakah. Tzedakah you do with your money. Chesed you do with your body. Okay? So Avraham Avinu was the Amura Chesed. He was the rising sun of the Jewish people, so he made Shacharis. Shacharis was called, the tefillah of Avraham Avinu was depicted as Vayamod Avraham. Asher Mokam Asher Amad Shom. Amida. Amida is tefillah. In fact, we call the Shemoneh Esrei the Amida. Right? Amida. Why? Because standing up means getting up, beginning of the day. It's also subjugating your body, because you are the most physical in the morning, right? It's the hardest. It's like you're a dead stone trying to get out of bed. I don't know, maybe you're different than me, but in any case, right? It's the hardest thing to get up in the morning. A little bit of hope and optimism. When you get to be my age, it's easy to get up in the morning. I used to remember that I watched the old men in shul when I was young. They were always there like a half an hour early. For they had not, they couldn't sleep, and they had nothing else to do, so they came to shul, hung around. And meanwhile, I had a hard time getting there on time, and I was the rabbi, I was supposed to be there on time, right? And these people were there, just lazing around, drinking a cup of coffee, walking around, they had nothing else to do. And they couldn't sleep. And now I understand that, right? Somehow it got much easier to get up in the morning. So there's hope for all you young people. But in any case, under normal circumstances, for most of your life, like it's mamish like tchias amesim to get out of bed in the morning. I saw in the States now, I was there, they have these, the on the plane, they have this Sky Mall, and all these interesting inventions. They have an alarm clock that you hook up to the bed. It shakes the bed. What's it called? When it goes off. Like, what's it called? I guess the people that really need a strong alarm clock. So, a better one they would have, maybe that tips the bed. In any case, so in the morning, you're like a dead body, like a rock. And you have to subjugate your body to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's Shacharis. Getting up. Getting davening. That's Avraham Avinu. Chesed, Amida, rising sun of Yitzchak Avinu, already the sun was waning. Things were the beginning of Golus. Yitzchak was born, was the beginning of Geri Yezaracha. It's like the afternoon, the what's it called, the waning sun. Things are still, the light's still there, but it's on its way down. That's what Yitzchak represented in history. Also, Yitzchak represented Avoda, Gvura, where you have to control yourself, you have all your possessions, right, and emotions and all the periphery of a person, and you have to subjugate it all to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that is Yitzchak, therefore is Mincha time. Mincha, you're busy. It's the hardest thing to stop working and daven Mincha. You have to stop all your peripheral things and daven Mincha. So Mincha is Yitzchak, and Mincha is called Siach, Lasuach Basad. He went to converse. Sicha means you're conversing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, meaning you're taking all your material, mundane things and subjugating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Like communication, Sicha is communication. That's the foundation of all commerce and all involvement in the world is talking. That's why the Migdal Bavel was thwarted when they couldn't talk to each other, they couldn't communicate. So that's Yitzchak. Sicha is Mincha time. It represents the history, the waning sun of the Jewish people. And that's Yitzchak. Avraham Avinu represented the first Beis HaMikdash. Yitzchak was the second Beis HaMikdash, was already on the way into the Golus that we're still in. And Yaakov is at nighttime. Nighttime is in the Shama. The body's not there, pretty much tired. Your body's out of commission. You're business doesn't happen at night. Most people don't work at night. So what's left? Your seichel, right? You're left to be a spiritual person. And that represents the night of Klal Yisrael Golus. So it follows the historical connection and the way that a person subjugates his body, then his material possessions and periphery, and then finally his neshama. So, and davening in Golus, when things are dark, and really subjugating your neshama is not the easiest thing, and therefore it's a rishus. It's not something that you have to do. It's something that takes a lot of ability, and therefore it's voluntary. Those are some ideas of the three tefillas of the day. Okay. Next. It says that when Yaakov wanted to sleep, there were 12 rocks that were fighting where should Yaakov put his head. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu made shalom between them and fused them all together and made one gigantic rock of them. And now there was no more problem. So the Ger Rebbe asks, and they asked before him also, why wasn't there any problem? Each rock, l'chor, if Yaakov was considering it to be his pillow, was big enough to put his head on. Now, if they all fused together, there was one gigantic rock 12 times the size of Yaakov's head. So he could only put his head on 1/12 of the stone. Why wasn't they still fighting which part of the stone to put him on? Now, so Rabbi Face of Frank says, it's possible that it didn't become, you know, what's it called, 12 stones connected, but it became one stone that was amalgamated from all the other stones, fused together, not one next to the other, but inside each other. Whatever, then there's no question anymore. But the Ger Rebbe assumed that they fused together, made one gigantic stone. So he says, when each person is a separate entity, then there's what's it called, there's a problem, me or you. But if it's all one thing, what difference does it make if it's this part of me or this part of me? It's all me. It's all one thing. It's all one thing, there's no more argument. This lends itself to explain something that Rav Shimon Shkop said. He asked a question, Rav Shimon Shkop. He says that you have a legitimate right to be self-concerned. It's a Torah mandate to be concerned about yourself. You come first. Okay, that's a halachic mandate. For instance, if you have an animal that's running away from you, and your father has an animal running away from him, or your Rebbe has an animal running away from him at the same time, and you can only save one of them, Hashavas Aved, you're going to prevent one of them from being lost. Who do you save? Your own. Only after you don't need, then there's a question, your father, your Rebbe, whatever, but you come first. If you have a certain amount of money and you need it for tzedakah, for yourself, and somebody else needs it, you give it to yourself. You come first. If you have a canteen of water, if you drink it, you'll survive through the desert. If you share it with somebody else or give it to somebody else, either you'll both die or you'll die. You keep the water. We learn from Sukkim, you come first.
What about the Torah talks about them sumat by Yarov the Al Yavor, then why should I, if it's Yarov the Al just to kill, either I can kill him or be killed.
Yeah, but here I'm not killing anybody, just the opposite. Who said he's more important than you? You have the water. So to give it to him would aggressively sacrifice your life for the sake of him. Who said you're allowed to do that? You're not allowed to kill him to save your life because who said you're more important than him? But you can't kill yourself to save him either because who said he's more important than you? So what do you do? Shave your tassel. You keep the water. That's all. So that's a legitimate concern, self-concern. On the other hand, you can't only be concerned about yourself, you have to be concerned about others too. So he says, how do you juggle and balance self-concern with concern for others? He says, it's only a problem if you consider yourself from your toes to your head. That's a big problem. This is me. Everybody else out there I have to be concerned about too. How do I balance self-concern with concern for others? He said, but some people are bigger than that. And they realize that their spouse is mamish part of them. A wife is like a husband, a husband is like a wife. So if you're concerned about your spouse, you're not concerned about somebody else. You're concerned about yourself. But yourself has two bodies. Self-concern. Some people are bigger than that. They realize that all their children are just an extension of them. So if they're concerned about their children, not concerned about somebody else, it's self-concern. Except their self has a lot of bodies to it. Some people are bigger than that. They recognize all their extended family is part of them. Like it says, ach, tzmiu besori, this week's Sedra. Lovan said, you're my flesh and blood. Right, therefore, I'm going to really cheat you. But you're my flesh and blood. So if I'm concerned about my aunts, uncles, cousins, it's all self-concern. Because there's a lot of bodies. Somebody bigger than that is concerned about his neighborhood, concerned about his city, concerned about his country, concerned about all bodies, all the world. It's all me. So then, there's no big problem. Because it's all self-concern. But it sounds like just a bunch of words. Because it's still self-concern, but which part of myself? There's this part of myself, there's that part of myself. But just like we said over here, when there were separate rocks, it's a very big conflict. Me or you. But if I consider you part of me, then it's which part of me has priority? But it's all me. It's not the same cheshbon anymore. It's much easier to make decisions between which part of me than me or you. That's the same thing with the results. Okay. Okay. It says that Yaakov Avinu first married Leah by mistake or by trickery, and then he married Rachel and says Vayehavis Rachel Mileah. He loved Rachel. Mileya, simple meaning is more than Leah. Okay, there is another meaning that the reason he loved Rachel is because of Leah, because what she did for Leah, that she gave her the simanim vayev Rachel Mileya. From Leah, he got his extra love for Rachel. But in any case, from the Torah it's mashma that he loved Leah, but he loved Rachel more. And therefore, what's it called when she had her first son? She called him Reuven, right? Because she said that Ro Hashem, God saw my plight, and now my husband will love me. In other words, now he has a reason to love me extra, right? He had reason to love Rachel extra, now he has reason to love me because I have a child and she doesn't. Okay, so far, he loves Rachel, he loves Leah, and now she has a reason. What's the second son? Shimon. Why? Ki shoma Hashem, ki snua anochi. And the Torah said before that, Vayar Hashem ki snua Leah. That Leah was hated. Yaakov hated Leah. And first of all, just said he loved Rachel more. Now it says she's hated. Right? God saw that she was hated, and she didn't call the first one, right? She just called the second one that. If she was hated, she called the first one. The first he hates me, now he won't hate me, now he'll love me. But the first one, now he'll love me, and then now he won't hate me? What does it mean? So you have to understand what love and hate is in the Torah. Love and hate is not what we associate love with a tremendous emotional feeling and sinah with a tremendous emotional feeling. But love and hate are basically the foundations of them. Love means a bond. You have a bond with somebody. You have a kesher with somebody. Now, that bond can develop into an emotional feeling. But love is not necessarily romantic love, because two men can love each other in normal circumstances, right? Right? Yonason and David, right? It's a love between brothers, brotherly love. It's not a romantic, intense, it's a bond. People feel a kesher one with the other. That's what ahava means. And ahava in gematria is echad, is a bond, connection. Sina, therefore, means a pirud, a separation, where you don't feel connected to the other person. Doesn't mean you necessarily hate the person's guts. But when you don't feel the connection, that leads to feelings of what we call hatred. But the sina, the basis of it, is I don't feel a connection with that person. Means you don't talk to somebody for 3 days because you have complaints against them. That's called you're a sone. You may not hate the person, you know, intensely, but you broke your connection. I always like to explain that's why we only find a mitzvah of love in the Torah to a ger, to God, and to every fellow Jew. We don't find a mitzvah you should love your parents, or that you should love a Talmud Chacham, or that you should love a Navi. You have to fear those people, respect them, but listen to them, but not love them. There's no mitzvah to love your spouse from the Torah. It's only a rabbinic thing. And even there, it's mashma, it's only a mitzvah on a husband to love his wife, and the Megillah shall reciprocate. They didn't require the wife to love the husband. They required a husband to love his wife. It's only rabbinic. So, it seems a little wild why there would be a mitzvah, it wouldn't be a mitzvah to love your spouse or to love your parents. So what are you going to tell me? Because you don't need a mitzvah for that. Everybody loves their parents and loves their spouse. You obviously haven't been around too much, okay? But as a rabbi, I know there are plenty of people who don't love their parents. I mean, in a big way. And there are people who don't love their spouse either. So, can't say it's because it's, and the Rambam says openly in a tshuva that there is no mitzvah to love your spouse, love your parents, right? Not that you don't need a mitzvah and everybody does it. There's no mitzvah. He says there's a mitzvah to love a ger. Why? So I was thinking, since love means a bond, a connection, the Torah couldn't command you to make a connection if there's not necessarily anything to make the connection on. The Torah can tell you where there is a connection, recognize it and build on it. Okay? But to make a connection where there isn't, there the Torah couldn't command you to do it. It's a nice thing. The rabbis came along and said it's a nice thing to do. Love your spouse, love your parents. Right? Surely better kibud av v'im if you love your parents. But the Torah wasn't mechayev you because there's, by parents, there's not necessarily anything you have in common with your parents. Except for the fact that they brought you into this world. But otherwise, in common, you may be a throwback to, genetically, to another generation. You may have red hair, both your parents don't have red hair, right? You have nothing physically in common with them. It's very common that people have nothing in common with their parents philosophically, ideologically, politically, or whatever, right?
Easier to say that there's no mitzvah for your parents or spouse because the connection is there in the mail.
No.
The Torah doesn't have to tell you to do it because it's moving on.
It's possible. But Lamaisa, it's not true, right? Because it doesn't necessarily have to happen. And it could be of no connection to your spouse either, right? You married him or her because she had $1 million in the bank, and that's the connection you have, right? And they have nothing in common, nothing, what's it called, really nothing basically that you have any connection to the other person. It's just whatever, or it was a shotgun that, what's it called, that brought you together or something. You know, there's a lot of reasons people get married that have nothing to do with any connection one with the other. On the other hand, where does the Torah say you must love somebody? A fellow Jew, right? Fellow Jew, you have a connection to. You have the same mitzvahs. Achicha b'Torah mitzvahs. A ger, you have the same connection, even more, because they chose to be like you in Torah mitzvahs. And God, we created b'tzelem Elokim. So there's no genetic throwbacks who are not domet to God. Everybody's domet to God. So those things, there is an essential, fundamental connection. So the Torah commands you to recognize it and develop it. But where there is no necessary connection, it's a nice thing to develop and create. The Torah didn't demand it from you. Like somebody said to me, well, you have to love your wife because she's another Jew. Right? She's not, it's a big problem, but she's another Jew, or she's a ger. So you have to love her anyway. I said, but do you really think my wife would be happy if I said, you know, I love you just like I love the guy next door? Right? Because you're all Jews, and you know, and I love you because you're a Jew. I don't think that would really wash well with my wife or anybody's wife or husband. So yeah, you have to love your wife, and it's clear the Gemara says that. The Gemara says that you can't marry a woman unless you see her first, because maybe you'll see her and you will have regrets. And the Torah said, you have to reacha kamocha. Right? It seems in the Gemara there was no other pasuk to bring about loving your wife. Just, you have to love her because she's, you know, like any other Jew. So if that's the case, and I can understand what it says over here, love means a bond. Wherever there's a separation and there could be a stronger bond, that's called hatred. Yaakov Avinu didn't hate Leah. He hated her, you know, emotionally. He couldn't have lived with her. But since he loved Rachel more, and even when she thought that she'd have a child, that would compensate and they would now be equal. But it didn't. There was still a separation between him and Leah compared to him and Rachel. That's called Sina. Vayar Hashem ki snua Leah. Didn't mean Yaakov hated her emotionally. It means that there was a certain amount of distance, which didn't have to exist, because by Rachel that distance didn't exist, and that's called Sina. That's snua Leah. That's called Sina. A distance many times leads to the emotional kind of Sina. But it starts with that. That is called Sina. Sina means a period. About run from
the rocks.
Oh,
that was the rock explained about the rocks. And here Yaakov is a steerer. Not only that, later on, he's a steerer with the sons also, because he loved the other Yosef, one of the other boys.
I hear. It's an interesting point. I'm going to think about it. It's an interesting point. I already quote you a few times, so this will be. It's an interesting point. Lachara, way back in the beginning of his career, the Rav Anishim showed him something that later on, maybe he ignored twice. I like the idea. Okay, I'll think about it. Okay. One more thing. There's something cute I saw, I think the Balei Tosfos say. So she had the first son was Reuven, Rei Hashem, Be'onyi, right? Second one is Shoma Hashem Ki Snua Anochi. And the third one was Levi. Hapam Yalove Ishi. Now my husband will accompany me. So why by Levi? So the Balei Tosfos says a very cute thing. He says, when you have one baby, so the wife can carry it. You can have two babies, she can carry him on both arms. Once you have three children, the wife, they don't make triple strollers, right? The husband's going to have to accompany her and carry one of the kids. So now he said, my husband will be around. He'll be accompanying me because I have three kids. Very cute. Cute idea. Okay.